Well, I'd be curious to know what Peter Dale Scott's opinion was.
I don't really know. I wasn't there. I'm just curious with that defense of Walter Sheridan. I think that's so corrupt I can hardly speak. I don't know what it's about, and I imagine, I don't know, I have no idea what that's about. It's just absolutely dumbfounded. I think if you're getting back to Walter Sheridan, it starts out again, but I send people to Fred Cook's series of articles in The Nation magazine many years ago exposing Walter Sheridan and also even Justice Earl Warren in the United States Supreme Court dissenting when the United States Supreme Court affirmed the conviction of Jimmy Hoffa because of all these irregularities and illegalities and crimes committed by Walter Sheridan that Justice Warren wanted to throw out the conviction of Hoffa. On those grounds, if you believe in the system of law, you would even let a guilty person go if you had violated the principles of justice in order to get him convicted. You let him go. So I really don't understand these people. And, you know, when I wrote my book, I realize now for readers, ordinary people, people who write to me, Vietnam vets, people who, and the best thing that can happen, and I've written a lot of books, but nobody, this book is very different for me because this is the first time where people come up to me and they say, thank you for writing this book. Thank you for doing this research. And it's very moving. There aren't any financial gains here, none, zero. But at least there's, the book makes a difference in helping people along the way to understanding. And there are also many leads in my book, areas where I really couldn't always follow and that younger people now should take it up. And there's plenty of a chance to carry this investigation further. We would welcome that. We would like to see elucidation. I'm sitting here with all these new documents that I just received last weekend, which proved that Oswald was working for the CIA, which proved that Oswald was debriefed, although if you look at the records, you'll see, oh, he was never debriefed. We see records of his being debriefed. We see, I'm sitting here with all of this. The material is still being released to the National Archives. And we have to fight to keep that going. We have to fight to keep everything that is out there remain out there because, as you know, there have been these movements now to retrieve, to take back documents that had been in public release for a long time. So we have to fight to keep those documents open. But they're all there, and I think that we're getting closer and closer to what happened. One of these problems, as I said, that we've had in this case is we've had obstruction of justice from people that we would expect to have it from, but we didn't expect to have it from the Kennedy family. And then we've also had that. We have had to deal with that, and specifically, of course, Robert Kennedy, who was the representative of the family at the time and who worked so hard to prevent us and prevent Jim Garrison, but not only Garrison. The Kennedy family was involved in refusing to release autopsy records, photographs, x-rays, all of these things had nothing to do with Jim Garrison. They did not want this crime investigated, and we have to try really to understand why. It's part of history. I think there are no sacred cows here.
You know, there's a similar ring there, if I may.
Sure.
Colonel Prouty mentioning how, wasn't it, Stalin wanted to see the body of Eisenhower because he believed he'd been poisoned?
No, not Eisenhower.
Wasn't it Eisenhower?
Stalin?
Roosevelt. Sorry, excuse me. Roosevelt, again, people. And his wife wouldn't okay it. And Stalin was really mad and wouldn't let her into Moscow after that. Isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't let her into Moscow after that because he believed that Roosevelt, sorry for getting my presidents out, but believed he'd been poisoned. Now, it does make you wonder what it is that
I know one thing. I learned something very new about President Roosevelt. I'm reviewing a book, actually, in my hat wearing as a book reviewer, a book about a history of the Pentagon called House of War. It's coming out in May, and the author is James Carroll, and he refers to how President Roosevelt had thought that after World War II, he would dismantle the Pentagon, that it was a temporary outfit, that we wouldn't need it. We wouldn't need a permanent war machine after the war was over. And, of course, we know he didn't prevail on that. And if we could see a view like that, would give credence to the view that he was not wanted around by certain forces.
It's interesting,
too. Here's President
too.
Truman going out there and, as we know, dropping the bomb.
Yeah, right after the fact. And then you take a look at, there's a very similar parallel between Kennedy and then Johnson, because Kennedy's NSAM 263 made it absolutely clear that all American personnel were going to be pulled out of Vietnam. And the draft, reneging that, pulling it back, began, the start for that draft happened even before he was dead.
Did you ever discuss with Colonel Prouty his remark that if I'm not mistaken, Colonel Prouty was the source for the remark from Lyndon Johnson, which was, are they also shooting at me?
Yes, yes,
and
that's correct.
Did you ever discuss that with him? Did that convince him that Johnson did not have foreknowledge
of
the Kennedy murder?
Well, he pointed that out, that that's in the FBI documents, actually. So it has been released. It's not just hearsay. That he, one of the, his first question was, were they shooting at me? And I think me also, or me too. But that lets you know that he was unclear of certain levels. So when something's on the go, things are compartmentalized. They don't have to tell everyone everything. They just have to know he's their guy, and they're satisfied that if he's in, that he'll look after their interests.
Yeah, and furthermore, Colonel Prouty made it pretty clear from trajectories and whatnot, he probably heard, if not felt, bullets, or at least one bullet, go over his head, and it was not normal to have president and vice president both in a motorcade. So somebody, in Colonel Prouty's opinion, from what I recall, was actually sending Johnson a message. That was his take on it.
Well, I can understand that. In other words, follow the program.
Exactly.
We're now going to go to war, and you better do exactly what is required.
And he did.
And, of course, he did. And I think that that's why I like this quotation from one of the soldiers of fortune whom I interviewed, Gerald Patrick Hemming, who said that President Kennedy was the last president who thought he could take power. When we get Johnson and Nixon and all the rest, then we find the current one, then we find people who are really figureheads who are, you know, standing out there but really have nothing to do with power.
Yeah.
I like the, you know, there was a book in the 60s, I believe, was written called Who Rules America by William Domhoff. And I think if ever a book needs to be written again and based on the contemporary times, it's that one. Who Rules America? Who Really Rules America?
Yes, I think I really like my husband's way of putting it. After JFK's death, they formed the JFK 6 Feet Under Club. You go along with the program or you join the JFK 6 Feet Under Club. Now, reality is that this is really the main reason, also getting back to what we were talking about earlier, why it's so important to understand our modern political climate, because everything did change when Kennedy was killed. It was literally a coup.
That's right. I agree. I definitely agree with that, and I think the civil liberties began to be eroded then. We're complaining now, but I think that once the press signed off on the Warren Report, we had an embedded press. And if we're complaining about the press so-called embedded in Iraq, it really began with the Kennedy assassination. It's very, very clear.
Yeah.
So I think that, and that's the first sign of a coup, you lose the right to dissent is severely limited. And, of course, the elections are fixed. Of course, they've been fixed for a while, but it doesn't really make any difference because power has changed hands.
And the manipulation.
The CIA was, when the CIA was not totally under control, what this president has done is to do really what John F. Kennedy wanted to do, which was really to eviscerate the clandestine service, which he did, and put the whole thing under this so-called Director of National Intelligence, which means even that the president could totally control the CIA, which previous, of course, President Kennedy couldn't do at all.
So what we really have now in our modern world is we have the Republicans largely in control of CIA, and the Democrats, when they're in power, largely, Clinton came in, took the thorns out of CIA and started up his DIA, which is basically his answer to. So really what we've got is power struggles even on U.S. soil, and it's not power struggles in the interest of the American people, it's just individuals trying to stay on the top of the food chain. And in the end, when something really serious happens, there's total incompetence because they're all fighting the wrong battle. They're just trying to stay on top of their little world. This is what I'm perceiving more recently. But in the end, it really does look like if I was to say who's really got the reins on the CIA, and CIA being a tool that can be utilized, it's really very much a Republican-dominated thing. And this saying, I'm saying this even though I understand that there are very gray lines now between Republican and Democrat, because when you
Well, I would ask
like,
you, your listeners, to look at an old book, which is Howard Zinn's book, A People's History of the United States. And you'll see in his book, and I'm very persuaded by it, although God knows he doesn't discuss the assassination, he skirts it, and I'd like to talk about that in a second, but that there are no differences between the Democrats or Republicans to speak of, that the Democrats didn't even have the guts to endorse the censure of George Bush by Russ Feingold. I mean,
Pathetic.
You are correct.
These Democrats, they have no principles whatsoever.
I think my point being is that they still have their own intelligence apparatus, one that is a little bit more leaning to this group of people, but they still answer. When you have somebody like Jackson Stevens or you know, the Murchisons of the world or whatever, when you have big power centers donating to both parties, you know that what really happens is that no matter who gets in, the bets are hedged.
There are no differences between the Democrats. I mean, I know it seems as if there might be, but I have to say I'm going to go along with Howard Zinn's view that there really is, there's no difference to speak of, and we just don't have an opposition party in this country. And I think that's part of what you're talking about when you talk about the coup. We haven't, that an opposition party hasn't, and the control of the press has something to do with that too. You can't really enlist people because they're so confused. This is a real effort to confuse the population and using all the media that they have at their disposal to do so.
Yeah, you know,
it's really a shame.
If I could just jump in with an analogy, since the Republicans are so good at analogies, if we have a hockey team, really what we have is one line versus another line. They're on the same team. There is no competition. You know, they're just pretending to play each other. And it's a handoff, I swear. There is plenty of evidence, and I'm sure their books could be read about it, but these guys must, in many cases, know 4 years in advance who's going to win the next election.
Well, I think a friend of mine said that there never will be another free election.
Yeah, sadly,
because
it might be true.
Another sort of way of saying the same thing.
I can't believe people have let paperless voting, no paper trail. When you go to use any kind of bank account, you get a little paper statement saying you took money in, withdrew, whatever you did, here's your balance. And people are letting this go by?
Yeah, it's a pretense, though. Oddly enough, it's the pretense that people are being protected because nobody can find out what they vote. I mean, of course, we know Diebold is totally compromised. All it takes is a medium-level hacker to mess with these machines. It's not even a challenge. I know in Canada, we're doing things the old way. We got the little pieces of paper we call them ballots. You know, ballots,
mm-hmm.
where you fill in your square and stuff. And I'm still wondering how long it's going to take for that to get messed up. But still, there should be a lot more people yelling. And I know, actually, some of the states are starting to rebel against this. But you know what I think it's really going to take? Not modern voting. It's going to take a major... somebody's going to put together a website that votes, where people literally vote. And it's almost like the... When people walked out of the voting booths, what they got from those people was not... the exit polls were not accurately reflecting. Now, normally, the exit polls do accurately reflect. So when they don't accurately reflect, it tells you that maybe there's some fraud going on. And it was really wrong, the last round here. Now, we will at some point have a major... internet setup. I know people have discussed about this, where voting issues, where weights will be given more and people will have to put in that way. And it's going to take something like that before the discrepancies are large enough that people say, okay, enough is enough already.
We don't have anyone to vote for.
Yeah, well, and this is a big problem too. I mean, you look at, they're complaining in Israel just had a vote with the lowest turnout in what, forever, and 62%. Good Lord, it would be nice to see that kind of a turnout on a good vote.
Well, one of the things
North
I
America.
Found when I was in East Feliciana Parish, and this is where the big core registration effort occurred on the day that Lee Harvey Oswald was up there. And now the young people do have the right to vote, but of course nobody votes because the corrupt government of Louisiana really never brought any industry up there. And It's a desolate area. There's no reason to vote. There's no one to vote for. And so I think that's the situation that we find ourselves in today.
Yeah, and
I think that's what you mean when you said that there was a coup. This is what it means when there's a coup. There's no longer, I mean, elections no longer mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. And the reality is young people might seem a lot very disinterested in a lot of cases, but the reality is perhaps maybe in some cases they're more perceptive than their parents who really think they can make a difference at these things. And I think if it really came up that it would make a difference that was obvious, we'd see more people out at the polls. But we've got a lot of disillusionment. And I honestly can't criticize somebody who doesn't vote because maybe their lack of vote is saying more than my voting. And
well,
there have been times when I haven't voted for that reason, because I was just so angry at my lack of choices that I refuse to endorse somebody just because I have to put an X on the ballot.
Well,
if there's
right,
a spot that says none of the
feel
above,
betrayed.
Okay.
If you ever got a John Kerry in power, and then he really didn't do anything different from what the previous person did, you'd really feel betrayed. I remember feeling the first betrayal that I felt, I have to say, if I could give a biographical incident, was John F. Kennedy. Because John F. Kennedy had promised that he was going to desegregate federally sponsored housing, which seems today a bit arcane, but it was a very important issue at that time. It was really extremely important, and it was absurd to have segregated federal housing, and he didn't do it. And when he didn't do it, and, you know, the whole, 3 years passed, whatever, he didn't do it, and that was his campaign promise. And I just had nothing, we didn't want any more to do with him after that, really. And we had the Vietnam War coming. He sent troops to Vietnam. We have to remember, although Kennedy was going to take them back, who was the one who sent all those death squads to Vietnam in the form of the Phoenix Program and all of that? And because Kennedy believed in covert action, that subject, it's not that he was the Prince of Peace at all. But anyway, here it is. And years later, I ran into Ted Sorensen, and I said the same thing I've just said to you, and he just followed me into the next room after the dinner, and he just said to me he was going to. Meaning, okay, and the next, once if he were reelected in 1964, he would have desegregated federal housing. But I was very young then, and idealistic, and I was through. And I think at that time I realized that you don't put your faith in the Democrats. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't even know why we're still having this argument here, which we are. And somehow our friends go to vote for Albert Gore, go to vote for John Kerry, and it's very hard to vote for these people.
Well, somewhere we always still think that maybe we can make a difference or maybe it would make a change. And you never know, a new face, people are still individuals. Somewhere somebody might get
some
guts.
See, I don't agree with you, Anita. I don't really think it has anything to do. I think they represent forces. I think they represent a structure.
You're correct. You are correct, and I'm not arguing that. But, for example, if I look at somebody like Bush, who marches us at 100 miles an hour, or you could use a different scale and say rocket ship speed, into war, versus somebody that might march us a little bit slower, well, we're using a scale where we're trying to have people educated, and the Internet's a big tool. Every day we get without being dragged a little bit further is a bit of an advantage. So there are actually levels of badness. And if I have to choose right now between George Bush and almost anybody else, I don't want a Bush in the White House.
I'm worried about the Internet because everything is unmediated. Lies are mixed in with the truth. And disinformation is flourishing with flags and banners and spangles.
Yeah.
And I noticed that John McCain, if I put my name up there myself and I look on Google, McAdams' attacks come right up, almost to the top.
Well,
I think you have to pay for that.
You're in privileged company, because guess what? If you punch in Colonel Fletcher Prouty, he comes up first, too.
I think he's paying for that, doesn't
he?
Yes, you bet.
You have to pay for some of those websites. You have to pay to be listed number one.
And you should be taking it as a compliment, because it means you're a serious enough concern that they would do that.
Excellent.
It's hard to take it as a compliment.
It is hard to take it as a compliment, but, you know, try to look at it in that perspective. It means you're getting somewhere.
Well, I'm in good company.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it is upsetting because there's maybe 38,000 hits, items, and it's right up there.
I've made a web page about John McAdams, just highlighting, and I'm going to email that to you, just so if that name comes across any researcher, you can forward the email.
Oh, and that's good. Do that, please. I hope everybody will look at my own website, which has a few things about my book and my op-ed and my ethical culture lecture, and it's called joanmellon.net.
And I'll make a link to that right beside our interview, your website.
And even there was a group called the New York Sound Posse that put it on audio and are on the internet somewhere with that lecture. So that was sort of very enterprising. I didn't even know they were recording me. And that's fine, because you want to get your views out. Absolutely fine. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, despite all the John McAdams out there and the terrible disinformation, I think that American people have been so buffered with one side that they've lost the ability to reason, and they need to go through these birthing pains to get a bit of a grip on reality and learn to discern fact and fiction. Because there are a lot of countries, you know. I mean, I traveled as a teenager. I went and lived in a foreign country where people had no illusions about bribes. This is the way you did life. And what? You mean there's corruption? Of course, there's corruption everywhere. They were so realistic about it. And it would be a breath of fresh air for Americans to learn how to discern. And the first step is to even know that it exists. And they have to be burned. People have to be burned by disinformation in order to get clever enough to learn how to find the real information. And as harsh it is as it is being a melting pot, I think it's better to have a melting pot like that than just to have only media where we're only getting the side promoted. Take a look what's happened to CNN. They have to resort to promoting blogs on the internet to get news now. Their listeners are dying off and going to the internet for information.
Well, I'd also like to say that I don't want to say that I was excluded completely. I want to give credit here to places that did allow me to speak, like the National Archives, the Ethical Culture Society in New York, a lot of libraries like the wonderful Free Library in Philadelphia where I teach at Temple University, and other places that really, and especially bookstores and libraries that really don't censor your views. And also C-SPAN, because I was on Book TV, and the Ethical Culture Society lecture was on Book TV, and amazingly, I thought it was quite wonderful of them to broadcast that program, and regardless of what I said.
Well, that's pretty good, because there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands, of good books, at least with some good information written on JFK, yet it does seem that almost, with the exclusion of just a few people, such as yourself, almost the only people who get any attention whatsoever are the Posners of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've made the kind of headway you've made, that's a very positive sign, and it's great that you've got some support, because so many people put these works out knowing that they'll never... It's not about money, and it's not about ever being able to make back what you put into it. It's just about trying to do a little truth-seeking and maybe get that across to somebody else. So good that you've actually found that kind of support, and I hope it picks up for you. And
well, I mean, I have to thank that little publisher, Potomac Books, Inc., that had the courage, and I must say also my editor, Rick Russell, did not censor my book, did not criticize. In fact, he was a naval historian, very interested in military history, and he wanted me to expand on the U-2 and discuss that more because he had a particular interest in it. And we had a marvelous time with the book, and it looks good. And one has to, you know, we have to really cherish the opportunities that we still have. We may not always have them, but at least we have them now, and we have to protect them. And I mean, there was, for example, in the New York Observer newspaper, there was an article by the lawyer for the New York Times, whose name is Martin Garbus, and he wrote, he compared the current political situation in the United States with Weimar Germany, saying that we're entering very dangerous times. And this was printed in a, you know, a well-known newspaper. It's not the New York Times, but the New York Observer, and he came. He was willing to come out and say those things. So we have to try to find every single opportunity that we can to dissent, to say no, and to try to tell the truth. It's not that we may not always have that opportunity. We shouldn't take it for granted.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, we're doing everything we can.
You are. You certainly are. Black Op Radio is definitely an example of as long as there's an opportunity to be heard on the airwaves and to say whatever it is that you feel like saying and that you think is true and that you can show is true, it's wonderful. We have to encourage, really, and cherish and value that, appreciate that. And I appreciate this, too, and coming on Black Op, and I always enjoy it, and... talking a wide range of subjects, not only about Jim Garrison. After I started out writing a biography of Jim Garrison, and what I wound up doing was myself investigating the Kennedy assassination with the new documents that became available after Garrison's death, and using witnesses that I could find on my own. And I want to defend my witnesses again. I want to say that Angela Morgado, for example, and Thomas Edward Beckham, I mean, who were very, very dangerous witnesses to people like John McAdams and Max Holland, that these people told me the truth. And I believe that.
Well, on that note, is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to bring up?
I think I'd like, we've covered that, and I think I'd like if anybody wants to hear this and want to talk more about Robert Kennedy's knowledge of Lee Harvey Oswald, which is what I'm working on now, because I know it's true, and I'm looking for more examples and more corroboration. I already have a lot of corroboration. If anybody has information about that or about General Walker's relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald, I'd be very interested in that. And I'm really and trying to continue. And that's what Jim Garrison said, that it didn't make any difference to him that Clay Shaw was acquitted. He just was going to keep on going. The only thing that stopped him, of course, was federal indictment.
Right. Okay, well, we'll put our feelers out for that. We do get a lot of people interested on the JFK subject, so if anybody out there has any tidbits that could be helpful here, now is the time to send them in. And, well, thank you very much, and we'll definitely keep you posted if anything comes in, and let us know how your work progresses.
I appreciate it, Anita and Len. Always a pleasure to be on Black Off Radio.
Thank you so much, then. All right, until next time, we'll just keep in touch via email.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay, you've been joining us today. It is March 30th, 2006, Black Hawk Radio 264. And in the control room, Len Osanek and Anita Langley. On the line, we had Joan Mellon. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll hopefully have Jim Fetzer back next week.
You've been listening to Black Op Radio, broadcasting weekly from the Fiasco Brothers Recording Studio in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network.
Interviews with Colonel Al Fletcher Prouty, Secrets of the U-2 Flight. We are pleased to announce Volume 1 of Interviews with Colonel Al Fletcher Prouty on DVD. This first one-hour DVD goes through the 1960 U-2 incident with Gary Powers. Colonel Fletcher Prouty reveals his inside knowledge of the incident, his office in the Pentagon, Operation Aquatone, Soviet overflights, and the similar Alan Pope incident. It is Prouty's position that the U-2 flight was sabotaged by the members of a secret team to stop the crusade for peace and embarrass President Eisenhower, thereby heating up the Cold War. And of course, Eisenhower warned everyone of the industrialized military complex that he had learned of firsthand in this incident. You will learn Gary Powers' U-2 never was shot down at 70,000 feet, as claimed in every single history book. Four separate interviews on one DVD, a one-of-a-kind must-have for anyone interested in finding the truth behind the cover story. Interviews with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, Secrets of the U-2 Flight.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln Limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder. If you believe there's more to the JFK assassination and the mystery surrounding the CIA and its covert operations, you're not alone. Meet the man Oliver Stone called X in the epic motion picture JFK. Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty comes forward with never-before-seen or heard documentation and information about JFK, the Vietnam War, the CIA, and more on a brand new CD-ROM. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty is an incredible offer not to be missed. For a limited time only, find the answers surrounding these issues and more with the collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Call now at area code 604-525-4167. That's area code 604-525-4167. Or visit the Colonel Prouty reference site on the World Wide Web. The collected works of Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty.
The Colonel Prouty reference site, www.prouty.org. That's P-R-O-U-T-Y, prouty.org. The Colonel Prouty reference site.
You've enjoyed Black Op Radio live and archived over the web, but now there's a way to listen without having to use valuable internet time. Order the Black Op Radio Archive CD-ROM. No more network congestion or buffering or file not found. The shows play right from your computer off the CD-ROM. Great for research or as a gift. For more details, check the website.